Welcome in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. I am your host, Matt Anderson. Join me, as always, is Rob Williams of FourQuarterFriday.com. Rob, I feel like you've had a busy, busy weekend.
It's been a really fun weekend, Matt. I'm so excited that we have real football here. We've had a couple of great weeks of high school football. Week three is now in the books there. And we got legitimate college football. Matt, let me just take a second. For everybody watching and listening, can we exhale? We made it, ladies and gentlemen. We made it. We had football on Thursday night. Friday night, I was on 107.5 The Game with Justin Hall. We did high school score recaps, and we were watching live college football. We had a full slate yesterday. We've got games happening right now. We've got Ole Miss playing later tonight. Games tomorrow, Matt. And if you are a football fan all around, the NFL starts on Wednesday. So we'll have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday next week as well.
It's a wild time, and football came back right in time. I was getting withdrawals. I was just scratching my wrist. I was just like, what am I doing? My elbow, everything. South Carolina did open the 2026 football season with a 57-0 win over Kent State. We're going to get to that. But first, Rob, this actually was the hottest day ever recorded in Columbia, South Carolina. The hottest day that Williams-Brice Stadium has ever hosted a game for. I see Lance is in here, and Lance, dude, I don't know what you were thinking wearing a black shirt in the top of the West, but dude, I salute you. That's insane. It was hot. I don't know how anybody made it the entire game. I've talked to folks who did make it the entire game, but I just want to say that, look, I'm a big, you stay until there's zeros on the clock.
Yeah.
But my father-in-law left at the end of the first quarter and said, look, I stayed until there were zeros on the clock. If anybody says that it wasn't the end of the game, I'm going to kill you. You know, I have a 3.5-year-old. I lasted about 8 minutes of game time with him. So I was not there. Rob, how long did you last?
I was still in the stadium when the clock hit zero. We'll put it that way. I did make my way down. The elevator line was long. I made my way down the stairs.
Oh, no.
As
stop.
The game was ending.
Stop, Rob. You made your way down the elevator. Rob, where were you sitting?
I was in a box. You know, it pays to have good partners here on the Chief Sports Network that can hook you up sometimes. So yesterday was one of those days where I was able to take advantage of being inside a little bit, Matt, and that made for a great viewing experience for me yesterday.
I will say that, look, I know that it didn't look great on TV, but it was good at kickoff. I mean, a lot of people made their way in.
It was.
I mean, towards the end, I can say at least towards the middle of the first quarter, it kind of looked like a war scene in the concourse. There were adults laying down. It was the hottest thing I've ever experienced in my entire life. So hopefully we don't have many more of those days ahead of us.
Yeah, the TV broadcast, so I checked it a couple times in terms of the index, but the TV broadcast had the heat index at 113 at kickoff.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, what else can you say? What else can you say? It was brutal. It was the worst. It was the worst I've ever felt it. I had some people with me that I knew was going to, that were kind of experiencing their first hot games in Columbia. And I've been prepping for a month or two. Like, this is going to be something that you probably haven't experienced. I know you've seen some cold games or whatever. Nope. It was more than what I prepped them for. This was the hottest. SEC Network said hottest game on the SEC Network, I believe, too, ever.
Yeah, and we're going to get to the game here. Look, the Gamecocks did cover the 36.5-point spread.
Heck yeah,
that's always good. I think that we'll get to it in a minute, but Rob, this was probably the best first game that Shane Beamer has had as coach of South Carolina in a lot of different ways. We're going to have our game recap. We're going to talk team. Then we're going to go to get to individual players. We'll do a little bit of a landscape checkup. You know, every game that's on the Gamecock schedule will tell you how those players or those teams did. We'll look ahead to Towson. We have Justin Lyles of Sports Got Value to talk about everything that was in the week of betting. But Rob, before we go any further, how upset are you about the Western Michigan end of game?
You know, I'm not super upset. I think that a lot of people are bent really out of shape about it. You know, it is very unfortunate. I don't have a dog in that fight, so it didn't bother me maybe as much as it bothered some people on my timeline and in my inbox yesterday. I was getting a lot of texts. My former co-host, Craig McMichael, is just a few minutes down the street from Ann Arbor, and he's, let's just say, not a fan of the maize and blue. So he was not pleased. But there's a lot of people who weren't pleased. The biggest takeaway for me there, Matt, is I started off my best bets on Friday night 1-0 with a big time win from Oklahoma, and they have Michigan next week. And my overreaction of week one, as we instruct people not to do, but I'll give you mine. My overreaction from week one is it's going to be 45-0 Sooners next week against Michigan.
Well, I won't spoil how well you did. We'll get there later with Justin so you can get all of your flowers. But let's go through the Gamecock football game really quickly. South Carolina's first offensive possession, Rob, my gosh, did it not seem like nothing had changed?
You know, it started to get a little antsy. You could just feel it, right? Just starting to creep up.
I think it was also heat and anger.
It looked eerily similar, though, Matt, when you got into a third and long, a third and 14, and then took a sack. That it was almost exactly what the Gamecock fans have watched all year in 2025. And so it boded well for this team and for the crowd that was left that the next eight possessions ended in touchdowns.
Yeah, and we'll start there. Look, I agree with Rob. You know, you would go through that first drive, 15-yard pass for a first down, -3-yard run, 8-yard pass, 6-yard pass, offensive line, false start, 1-yard run, incompletion, sack, punt. But after that, Rob, my gosh, did Kendall Briles look like he was playing on EA Sports varsity mode. 7 plays, 87 yards, 2 minutes and 42 seconds, touchdown. 8 plays, 85 yards, 3 minutes and 1 second, 2-point conversion, good. 6 plays, 92 yards, 1 minute and 56 seconds of game clock, touchdown. 7 plays, 87, 6 plays, 75, 11, 72, 11, 86, 8 plays, 61. At the end of the first half, Rob, our very own Jamie Bradford, JB of the BigSpur.com, ITG, tweeted out that the Gamecocks had 359 total yards of offense at the end of the first half. That was more than Mike Shula had in any entire game coordinating this offense through 9 games. So, Rob, let's start there. End of the first half. What were your thoughts?
Well, it's the antithesis of what we saw last year in the opener from an offensive standpoint, right? First drive last year against Virginia Tech. The entire stadium is thinking, oh, my goodness, look at this South Carolina offense. This team is legit. Could they be a playoff contender? And then the rest of the game, there was almost nothing from the offense. Opposite effect this time. And I will take this opposite effect any day of the week and twice tonight on Sunday on the Late Night Gamecock Show. Matt Anderson, a dud of a first drive for sure. Things looked about the same and then rolled it off, okay? Yes, Matt Fuller was out there blowing chunks all over the field, throwing up left and right, but he looked the part. Bouncing off tacklers, making the most of space. The biggest thing for me there, Matt, when you look at the first half, is those holes continue to open for runners. Whether that was very seldom did we see the called Lenore Sellers run, but even in those cases, he had space to move. These running backs had space to get to the second level. I know that competition is going to increase in the coming weeks, Matt, but this is what we asked for. You needed to see the offensive line move those defenders off of their spot, because there's no way that the athleticism and strength and depth of a team like a Kent State or Towson in week two should be able to clog up that line of scrimmage. South Carolina did what was expected, what was needed, and maybe a little more than that, Matt.
Well, look, at the end of the game, Rob, the Gamecocks rolled up 645 yards of total offense, and that's with a 10-minute fourth quarter. The Gamecock offense averaged 11.1 yards per pass attempt, 7.1 yards per rush attempt. The Gamecocks were 7 of 8 on third down conversions. The offense did not commit a single turnover. The Gamecocks possessed the ball for 34 minutes and 47 seconds. Gamecocks defense forced a turnover thanks to Kosey Barnes. He got an interception against a quarterback that only threw 3 last year. The defense held the... Are they the golden flashes or the flashes? What are we going with, Rob?
I don't know. I don't know what we're going with. You know what? Just for the sake of time, we have too many Gamecock things to talk about. Let's just call them the flashes. Leave out one of those words.
Yeah, they're the flashes. Kent State only had 179 yards of total offense. 3.4 yards per pass attempt, 4 yards per rush attempt. Kent State only had 10 first downs in the game. And the Gamecocks played a clean game of football. We talked about that false start penalty on offensive line in the first drive of the game, but only two more penalties the rest of the way. Rob, you know, overall thoughts here. Let's talk about the offense.
Yeah, I mean, we talked off the air, right, a little bit this morning. The biggest thing that jumped out to me when you look at the offense was, yes, they were able to run the ball and those holes open, but in the passing game, kind of where they were directing the football, I think is what I see you over there in the chat box. Chat box is hopping, and Lance says
it sure is.
Golden flashes is reserved for Johnsonville. Shout out to fourquarterfriday.com, where Johnsonville is often a topic of discussion in Class A. Okay. Where they're directing the football from an offensive standpoint, Matt, was something that jumped out to me. Really force feeding Nick Harbor and taking what was there. I think this offense, they didn't take the deep shot as much. A couple of double moves for Donovan Murph for sure, and Lenore Sellers took his fair share, but not one to Nick Harbor. You have those underneath throws to him over and over again. I like the maturity that Kendall Browse brings in. Maybe they're holding back and not challenging with him down the field, but also there are going to be teams that are going to sit back in soft coverage and dare him to do something underneath. South Carolina, I think, proved that he can do that yesterday. Mm-hmm. And you were able to see a little bit of yards after the catch from Harbor as well as he looked to maneuver. They threw him the ball at the line of scrimmage, Matt. We have said time and time again, maybe that's not the type of player that he is. Kendall Bryles says, not so fast. He has a bigger skill set than maybe what everybody expected here. We're going to get him the ball on screens. We're going to get him the ball in the intermediate routes. We're going to get him the ball on short curls and let him make something happen after he catches the football. There'll be plenty of time for that deep shot later on in the year. But Nick Harbor as looking a little more like an all-around receiver to me, Matt. That's the biggest takeaway for me when I look at this offense. And as we mentioned, there's depth at the receiver position. Shout out Donovan Murph. Shout out Irmo, South Carolina, for a couple of double move touchdowns.
Yeah, one thing I'll say is, you know, I've poured through this data, Rob, and Bryles and Sellers forced Kent State to cover the entire field. You talk about the nine boxes, you talk about behind the line of scrimmage, 1-10, 10-20, and then 20 plus. So really 12 boxes, but I think about pass line of scrimmage with my nine. They were peppering all sides of it. So Lenore Sellers attempted 17.4% of his passes were short left, 21.7% were short right, 17.4% were behind the line of scrimmage, and that's what opened up those deep shots to Donovan Murph. It was 50-50 play action for straight dropback, and Lenore Sellers threw all three touchdowns, Rob, on straight dropback, just making the defense think a little bit longer than they want to. I do think it was interesting that all of Nick Harbor's targets all came within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. I promise you that is not going to happen long term. But just to see Gamecock guys get open, even Nitro Tuggle got out there, drew a pass interference on the left side. Lex Iris made maybe one of the catches of the day in college football on the left side. You know, there are little things that they have to work on. But just the fact that Lenore Sellers went 10 of 12 for 115 yards on play action, 9 of 11 for 155 yards and 3 touchdowns on straight dropbacks. Sellers, according to PFF, had 0 turnover-worthy plays, so he never put the ball in jeopardy. And, you know, you had the DJ Black and you had the Matt Fuller when they put the ball on the ground, when the Gamecocks got it back. That's the kind of thing that I think Shane Beamer's talking about, where we got to clean up some things. You never put the ball on the ground. Mazio Bennett, look, that was the one drop of the game. I think everyone knows exactly what we're talking about. It would have been a touchdown. That was actually given a drop to Mazio Bennett. I think you can argue it either way, Rob. But, look, guys, Sellers was 11.7 yards per pass attempt and 8 out of 10.3 yards per downfield. Sellers only had 6 quarterback pressures the entire game, Rob. That is a far cry from last year. And the slice of the pie were even. They had 6 guys that had at least 3 targets, a couple more with 2, a couple more with 3 each. I love the passing game, and I love that when Woods came in, it didn't seem like the offense changed.
Absolutely not. It did feel like everything kind of stayed exactly like you expected it to be. Depth at the running back position, well, I'm sure we'll get to in just a moment. I'll comment here on the passing game for just a moment. You're starting to see, one, the depth of the wide receiver room, but you're also starting to see some of these guys emerge as your top 4 to 5 that are going to get the lion's share of the snaps. Obviously, we discussed Nick Harbor getting a lot of targets early, but then you also have Donovan Murphy making a name for himself here early on in his sophomore season. And Mazio Bennett looks the part, Matt. He looks exactly like what we discussed. He's finding holes in space. The touchdown, he's wide open. The dropped touchdown, he's wide open there
wide
as well.
Open.
He finds holes in defenses and sits in them, okay? And Lenore Sellers was quicker getting the ball out of his hand yesterday. That's a testament to Kendall Briles in this offense. There was not a lot of dancing around back there and holding it. He did display on a time or two his ability to get out and move a little bit and work the ball that way. But he didn't really have to, Matt. And I like the balance. We talked about the passing game, and obviously that's flashy, and people love to see it. And you like the deep throws. You like the explosives through the air. But this thing is going to be built on a running game. And there are multiple running backs here, Matt, I believe, that are going to be able to gash defenses. I understand it's Kent State, but the offensive line creating holes. The size of the holes yesterday, Matt, will not exist for the rest of the year in the SEC, but those holes were so big that you could shrink them down, and these backs are still going to be able to make something happen. Specifically, Matt Fuller's ability to bounce off of would-be tacklers was kind of something that stuck out to me. You got home run speed from some of these backs. You had them knifing through the second level, falling forward in so many cases. I noticed this with guys like Isaiah Augustov and Joran Howell even later in the game. Fresh legs, the ability to bring those guys in. It's going to make a difference when they need this later on in the season. Matt Fuller looks the part. He's a stud.
I'll tell you this, in the running game, we talked about it all offseason. Kendall Briles loves a hefty run-blocking right guard and a right guard that can clear space. And yesterday was basically a right side gap power attack over right guard, over the center, kind of mixing and matching, going back and forth. 63.4% of the rushing yards came from behind the center or right guard. All five running backs that played in the game had at least 5 carries. Every single one of them, except for Christian Clark, had an 11-yard gain. The team as a whole averaged 3.82 yards after contact. So they were running through tackles, and that's the one thing. You know, Rob, you mentioned that the offense looked like they had running holes. They had running lanes. One thing that I realized watching the game and then watching it again is oftentimes it was a wide receiver blocking, offensive lineman pulling, a tight end giving some area, fullback. And it wasn't just what we've seen for so long, which was, all right, here's the handoff. Figure out where the offensive line didn't block and go there. Like, it was, okay, the offensive line's making a hole enough for one person to go through. Now you follow that person through that hole and then find where you can bounce out afterwards. The running backs did force 15 missed tackles as a team. So it wasn't just on the offensive line. I felt like this was, like I said, it was like Kendall Briles playing on JV mode on NCAA football. And I don't think that Gamecock fans expected it after the first drive. It really was, wow, this is what a college offense looks like. Moving on to the defense, Rob, the pass defense. Look, we all talked about Darrellus Clark. And again, shout out, the coolest name in college football this year, especially when you consider him being as athletic as he is.
Absolutely.
They completely took him out of the game, Rob. He had 2 catches for -3 yards on 4 targets. The defense did allow 60.9% catch percentage, but they kept everything in front of them. 51 of the 79 passing yards that Kent State had were yards after the catch. Gamecocks did miss 5 tackles in coverage, and the DBs were responsible for 2 of them, linebackers for 3. But 0 penalties on the defense in coverage, generated 9 quarterback pressures, 1 sack, 1 interception. If you use the NFL rating system, Rob, Kent State's quarterback Drew DeShields had a 49 NFL quarterback rating. So just thoughts on the defense, especially in the pass defense to start.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that I saw about the defense, Matt, that jumped off to me, and I would go kind of all three levels here, but specifically in the secondary and on the defensive line, was the amount of guys that are rotating in and out. This looks eerily similar to on the offensive side of the ball with the wide receiver position, the running backs, even the offensive line in a game like this where everybody's going to get snaps, Matt. But early in the game, you've got different DBs rotating in and out, getting the opportunities. Same thing on the defensive front. And that is also something that, you know, as I looked at it, even as the game went on, you're seeing quote-unquote backups coming into the game, but that you're not getting drop-off. You're not getting guys that come in that don't have the same abilities that some of the guys that started ahead of them. And Shane Beamer mentioned it in his post-game press conference when he rattled off the Fab Five freshmen and said, you know, a lot of them got snaps early, and I look at them as starters in some ways. Yeah. So when we look at that secondary, I think that the quote-unquote starting group is bigger than the five that actually start on the field. They have trust in basically the two deep to get out there and start. Whether it's Quayshie Scott or Gerald Kilgore, they're kind of interchangeable. We saw a lot from Jazavian Currents and from Kendall Daniels back there at the safety spots. Obviously, David Busey and Peyton Williams got the start, but I think that maybe you have three or four that can get it done back there as well. And then DeMarcus Leach came in and played well. You had Cossie Barnes with the interception. So you're going to be able to see some of those corners coming along behind Judge Collier and Vicari Swain as well. The big thing for me, Matt, when I look at them, and you mentioned the missed tackles from the defensive backs, a couple of those, and kind of keeping receivers in front of them. Judge Collier is huge, and I think that can be forgotten based on, you know, how he's a step slower last year. Vicari Swain, not a small corner either. This is a Torian Gray secondary. Nobody's small. But Judge Collier is a force, I think, out there. And when he's coming downhill and keeping guys in front of him, I think the Gamecocks can live a little bit with some of those underneath throws if they are able to have sure tackling. And I think that will tell the tale. Can this secondary put guys on the ground routinely, especially in open field solo opportunities?
That's the big thing for me. I'm a big missed tackle guy, and I understand that, you know, you grade those how you grade them. Like, was a defensive player even in a position to make the tackle? I don't know. Was it somebody in front of him? Were they trying to recover? Who knows? But you look at the run defense. The run defense only missed one tackle, according to PFF, and that was a guy that plays in the secondary that was very, very late in the game. The defense gave up 100 yards rushing, but Kent State quarterback Drew DeShields led the team with rushing with 27 yards on three carries. You kind of take out the one sack, and then he had one 26-yard run that was on a scramble. I do get a little worried about, like, the leaking out, because we all know that in 2 weeks, Kamario Taylor's gonna be there, and sometimes Kamario Taylor can look like Lamar Jackson.
And if you thought the other ball carriers yards, only, if you thought 645 yards from the Gamecocks was impressive, how about 700 plus for Kamario Taylor in Mississippi State yesterday?
We'll get there, Rob. But I will say that Louisiana Monroe might be the worst tackling and worst angle team I've ever seen play defense. But, you know, nothing to take away from those guys, because look, Kamario Taylor's a beast, and it's going to be difficult. But if you look at the running backs not named, or the running backs on the team, the rushers not named to Shields, they averaged 3.3 yards per carry. I feel like the defensive tackles and the defensive line did a really good job bottling them up. There was only one other explosive rushing play for Kent State, and that was a 23-yard run. So they only had two explosive running plays. Special teams, Rob, I don't really know what the heck to say about special teams. One punt for 37 yards, 3.97 second hang time, no return. Perfect 7-on-7 on extra points. I feel like both kickers were trying to literally kick the air out of the ball to try and prove that they deserve to be the kicker going forward. And then kickoffs, there were 9 of them. 8 were fair catches. 1 was returned for 14 yards. You kind of take that. Rob, let's move on into individual player thoughts. I know we've touched on a number of these guys.
One thing I would say there about special teams, and this will transition us into individual performance. I thought Vakari Swain was kind of the standout for me from a special teams standpoint. He looks loose back there, Matt. He wants one. He's waiting for one. He took it off the hop early on in the game. You could just see him come up and make a tackle on third down and then begin trotting back, and you can just see the pep in his step, even that 113-degree heat index, to go back there and get one. He had one return where the left side opened up for him, and there was kind of a shoestring tackle where he tried to hop over a defender. That was the one I think that he breaks if he can get through that one missed tackle right there. So I'm looking for something from him. Towson will be an opportunity for him to get loose in the punt return game, because I think that the Gamecocks will have some opportunities there.
I think they will too. We talked about quarterback. Anything you want to add on Lenore Sellers, Cutter Woods, Lucian Anderson?
Well, I think from Lenore Sellers, if there's anything to be critical of, yeah, I think there were some underthrows. And I think game one, maybe that has something to do with it. It's an extremely hot game. I don't want to make excuses one way or another, but I expect that to kind of get shored up a little bit too. He impressed me in the short and intermediate game. There was one or two that he one hopped, and then obviously the drop that Mazio had was a little underthrown. Even one of the touchdowns to Donovan Murph was a little underthrown as well. But I think that you'll see that kind of clear up. The impressive thing for Lenore Sellers to me was you can feel and see the leadership quality. Nick Harbor has been vocal about the fact that Lenore Sellers has taken a big step as a leader of this team and called him the coach on the field when Shane Beamer is standing on the sideline. They have trust in 16 out there leading this team in a way maybe that he hasn't in the past, a little more vocal perhaps. You can feel that confidence a little bit too in the way that he's moving around. And so I think that will the leadership factor, not just from Lenore Sellers, but really starting there and then to some of these older guys, whether it's Bennett or some of the transfers on defense even. I think, you know, Shane Beamer mentioned that close games were a problem last year, Matt. I think we'll see that later on this season where that leadership makes a difference. The little things are the difference between 35-17 in this game yestterday and 57-0. And leadership takes care of those little things. We saw that happen for the South Carolina team, maybe in a way we haven't seen recently in this program.
I'll say that I do think there was a little bit of like PTSD for Lenore Sellers early in the game that I think settled down a little bit. And who can blame him, like, after the first drive? Because every single person in the stadium was thinking the same thing Lenore was thinking. Like, oh my God, here it is again. But it didn't happen, and you saw him settle down. Running backs, I don't know much more we can say outside of, like, look, Jabri Coleman has been getting a lot of run lately. Just the last week and a half, if you haven't been on thebigspur.com, we've been talking about him, and he showed why. He has wiggle. He's a Stan Drayton guy. Stan Drayton brought him from Penn State. And, look, if you have a top three of Fuller, Clark, and Coleman, wow. And then Isaiah and then Jerron, both, they flash every time they touch the ball. Like, Gamecocks have a plethora of running backs. Pass catchers, we talked about Nick Harbor not getting a deep shot. Donovan Murph is a guy that I've said for a long time, I really believe in his talent. I was sitting next to somebody on his first touchdown catch back at a friend's apartment, and they were like, he reminds me of Alshon Jeffrey. I said, well, yeah, they're cousins. And funny enough how that works. Lex Iris, my gosh, Rob, like, people have been looking for something from him, and they just thought that he was a scat back almost, slot guy, but look at him go downfield.
Great hands to pluck the ball out of the air, Matt, from Lex Iris. There was a high throw where he just snatches out of the air. Obviously, the juggling catch where he kind of lays out from that on that ball from Cutter Woods. A couple of them there. I want to say a shout out again to our chat box over here that is rolling. My friend Snacks says that he thinks the run game is suspect. Snacks, I have not been to the barbershop to argue with you lately, but I plan to get there this week to let you know that I strongly disagree with that take.
Well, offensive line, I think we got to, I mean, look, we can shout out every single individual player. We'll never finish the show. I mean, there were a lot of guys that did a great job. Offensive line, Darius Gray gets to start at left tackle. I think he largely held up. If you look at his PFF grade, Rob, he was the best pass blocker on the team. Maybe that's why he was playing left tackle to start the game. Nolan Hay probably had the best game overall.
Yeah, I agree. And Darius Gray, I think, almost has to become the story here for me, Matt. Like, starting the game at left tackle as a true freshman is kind of crazy. And Shane Beamer said, you know, he's repped everywhere. We could play him anywhere. But that's where he was. Yeah, the broadcast asked the question, if he continues to progress, as Taylor Zarzer and Matt Stinchcomb, if he continues to progress, where it happens to Jacarius Peak when he comes back? Do they move in the right tackle?
Oh, wow.
I don't think so. But they did say, we expect Jacarius Peak to come back. Will he slot in at left tackle as expected, or will Darius Gray hold on to that spot? I think Jacarius Peak's going to be there. But it is encouraging to see at probably the most important position on the offensive line, you have that stud true freshman that's not there because other guys aren't good enough. He is there because he's that good.
And look, Ethan's already saying it. Ethan, I'm not saying you're crazy, but I would like to start Peak if I was a Gamecock coach based on experience and with what's coming up. We got to go through this fast, Rob, but big couple quick shout outs here on defensive end, defensive tackle, linebacker, DB, safety.
I thought that on the edge spot, Julian Walker obviously stands out to me from a size standpoint. I thought that 39 and 40, that would be Caleb Herring and Anthony Addison, have that sleek, slender build, the speed rusher ability. I think that they held up okay in the run game, which is what we were kind of watching for. Julian Walker is a man among boys from a size standpoint, and I thought his first step and his get-off was impressive against this crew yesterday. I'm excited to see how that continues as competition increases in a couple of weeks, and if Dylan Stewart is back at that point, what does that open up for the rest of these guys? They're getting quality reps right now against lesser opponents to kind of get their feet wet and get warmed up there, but then as you have opportunities that that come up for them, when you're inevitably going to have six getting a double or maybe even a triple team later on in the year. I thought that the other thing that stuck out to me when you look at the freshmen is the enthusiasm of Jazavian Currents. I had a conversation with somebody earlier today just explaining the landscape of college football as we know it right now and how much influence non-football factors have on where a guy is and what he's where they're playing and what they do. And to see somebody who just absolutely loves football in the way that Jazavian Currents does, that's been the message about him since we were covering him last year as a senior at South Point. You could see it come through as he celebrated his teammates. Every opportunity to make a play, whether it was special teams or in the secondary or when somebody else made a big play, he was all over it and the enthusiasm was there. I think that speaks something about the type of player that the Gamecocks have back there. And he's got the physical tools. So if you have that just love for football that makes you dig in and grind and do the extra things, I expect big things out of him because he's got the build to already do it. Again, the last thing I'll say on the defense, we give shout-outs, I know we're moving fast here. The depth and the defensive tackle spot was everything that it was advertised. Yeah. That ability to be fresh late in games is going to bode well for this defensive unit. Because if you can clog the run game and put pressure on the pass game, your secondary does not have to cover for as long, and they have good cover corners. So if you can shorten that window for them, that's big time for this for the South Carolina defense.
Rob, I completely agree with you. I'm going to go through the Gamecock schedule right now. Just what happened this past week. I'm not going to do Towson. We'll get to them later because we do have a preview for Towson. But Rob, I'm going to go through it. You just tell me what stood out to you in any game, and then we'll come back. And if there's something I want to point out, we can definitely get there. Mississippi State beat Louisiana Monroe 62-13. Alabama beat East Carolina 48-10.
Kentucky, in both of those cases, I'll comment on those first two really quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
New quarterbacks, dual threat quarterbacks, kind of knew what to do with the ball. I felt like in terms of run or pass. Making that decision, and both of those quarterbacks were accurate with the football. Big holes for especially for Kamario Taylor throwing to his receivers, but still they both of those guys looked really good. I think throwing the football and made some guys miss in space. You got 2 weeks before you see Taylor. You got 3 weeks before you see Keelan Russell. So they're going to continue to warm up, and both of those teams will play semi-quality opponents before the Gamecocks.
They definitely will. I mean, look, if you go through this, SEC really dominated, especially the teams that are on the Gamecocks schedule. I see Matt Sellers talking about Florida. Yeah, I think Florida Atlantic just wasn't a great matchup. Sorry, I'm looking at my window and I see a rainbow. God's promise. Amen. But with Florida and Florida Atlantic, you know, 66-21, Jaden Ball just looked like
the jump cut. The jump cut was nasty. It like I yelled at my TV when he made that cut, and I have no real rooting interest in the game.
He made literally like five of those. I see Jay Diz seen number 21 make a perfect jump cut, and House it brought a tear to my eyes. Absolutely, man. 21 is a special number, for sure. I thought with Florida, quarterback Aaron Follow looked like he belonged. It looked like he was a guy that had been in the offense for a while, maybe a plus game manager. But he took some shots. He was able to get out there. You know, Eric Singleton, maybe he has a tweaked ankle. We'll see what happens. John Summerall was kind of saying he gave it a go, wasn't really working. We don't know the severity of that. That's a couple weeks away. Kentucky, we'll talk about them here in a little bit. Tennessee beat Furman 56-9. 300 yards in the air, 300 yards on the ground. Faison Brandon, this is one of the guys you've talked a lot about, Rob. Thoughts on his performance?
Well, I mean, similar to these other guys, I think that you had an opportunity for a tune-up game and to display the tools. Faison Brandon might have some of the freakiest tools out of any of these guys, right? Like, mm-hmm. he is Mr. It Factor when you talk to people over there in Knoxville. So, you know, I thought that you, like you said, it was balanced. I still, even though he has all these tools, I still expect Tennessee to lean early on Bishop in the run game, and get that offense going that way. And then if Faison Brandon becomes the X factor for them down the stretch, we'll see how that goes. But long way to go for Tennessee. And you know, same thing can be said for South Carolina. You have these lesser opponents trying to get it going. But it is no offense to the Paladins, to our friends inside the confines of this wonderful state. But it is an FCS team.
Oklahoma blanked UTEP 51-0. I don't know there's much to say here, Rob. I know we'll get to that in your best bets later. A&M beat Missouri State 50-0. The big thing for me is Missouri State only gained 67 yards of total offense. Arkansas beat North Alabama 31-14, probably a little bit closer than Razorback fans wanted that to be. Georgia beat Tennessee State 63-3. The big thing for me was that Georgia quarterbacks, or at least pass throwers, 25 of 33 for 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, and 388 passing yards. They also racked up 272 yards rushing on 10.1 yards per attempt, another 4 TDs. So Georgia rolled. Rob, I think we need to take a sponsor break and bring Justin Lyles of Sports Cap Value in so he can talk about the Clemson and LSU game to start us off. Welcome back into the Late Night Gamecock Show. I am Matt Anderson. Joining me as always is Rob Williams of FourQuarterFriday.com, which we just had an excellent, excellent sponsor break for. Justin Lyles of SportsCapValue.com. Justin, if you're just catching us, it looks like you're in your car. I know you weren't playing golf because it is pouring down in Lexington.
Jeez, man, we just got beat down by this weather. I'm just trying to find a dry spot around here in Lexington, but here we are, you know, the show rolls on.
Well, Justin, you called us right when we were going to recap the last game on the Gamecock schedule that we haven't gotten to yet. I'm just going to let you give your thoughts on the Clemson-LSU game last night.
Bloodbath, an orange bloodbath. I mean, smackdown. I mean, they made me wait an hour and 40 minutes to watch that. I mean, like, what are we doing here? Like, I got to give it to Lane Kiffin, you know, for like really like drawing out the delay. You know, they talked to him and like I hear he's like, yeah, let's let him wait it out. I'm like, man, it's kind of genius thinking about it. But I mean, besides Miami, I think LSU and Miami are the two best looking teams in college football after week one.
You know, I think I tried to say this a couple of times last week. I think Lane Kiffin thrives this way. I think he likes it. I think the LSU faithful like it. I talked to my LSU contacts down there who said, nobody cares inside this locker room. Charlie Weiss Jr. is not in any of these meetings. He's not listening to anything anybody says. He's prepping for the game. Like, none of these players are in any discussions. It has not been brought up inside the building. Nobody is talking about TROs and injunctions and pro players and lawsuits outside of Lane Kiffin and maybe Billy Glasscock and whoever, like administrative people, the president, the AD, nobody in that locker room was working on it. So all the distraction talk was a distraction in and of itself for the fans that were preparing for the game, trying to fool themselves into thinking this was going to be competitive.
Well, I think, you know, you look at it and we're talking about the Gamecocks opponents the rest of the way. And the last game of the season is always the most important game for a lot of Gamecock fans. LSU, you guys have already said it. They did anything and everything they wanted to do offensively, defensively. LSU had 644 yards of total offense, Clemson 145. The big thing right now to watch is that Clemson looks to have a quarterback controversy based on what Kirk Herbstreit, Reese were talking about during the game. We'll see what happens with that, but a long, long way to go before the Gamecocks play Clemson. Justin, I do want to get your quick thoughts on the Gamecocks versus Kent State. Rob and I have given our piece. Love to have you give yours.
Yeah, sure. Just all around, I mean, really good game on all facets. I don't know that South Carolina's played a more complete game that I can recall in a long time, if not ever. Obviously, I know it's a lesser opponent in Kent State, but you look at the stats, 645 yards, three penalties, one sack, and the sack's probably a coverage sack or maybe on Sellers. Overall, defense didn't give up any points. I'm not sure you can really ask for anything more.
Yeah, I think you're all over it. By the way, Justin, I cannot get the Sandlot out of my head right now with your hat. You look like the kid that couldn't catch a fly ball with that bill. And I think there's a fish on it, too. Or is that sports cap value?
It's sports cap. It's probably what you're seeing through my phone. But, yeah, we took a beat down with the rain earlier, so we're kind of rocking it right now.
Look, that's only the kind of joke you can make when somebody's hit about 18 three-pointers in your face. I'll take my wins when I can get them.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, Justin, I want to get your thoughts overall on the slate this past weekend. Obviously, the thing that's on my mind, and I'll talk about it later, is Western Michigan getting absolutely hosed in every way imaginable. But I thought the slate was better than we thought it was going to be heading into week one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, probably the best game was the Baylor-Auburn game. Going for two. I love the call. Just if he leaves that, you know, the tight end, they win the game. It was just a bad throw. Overall, yeah, I mean, a lot of big spreads as well, though. Kind of from the sharp side, really took it on the chin overall. But that's okay in the long run. It's really about how we're doing in October, November when it comes to stacking up units. But overall, game-wise, I thought it was pretty good. And then ended up with LSU, Clemson, obviously not the game that everyone was looking forward to. But I think the games will get a little bit better in week two.
Yeah, we got a lot of them, actually. And y'all, look, if you want to talk about bad beats, Justin, tell everybody about your Yankees game that was, I think, what, Wednesday night?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I'm still licking my chops on that. I texted Matt and was like, you know, you got to see this. I had the under 6.5. I was all over it. It was so low. I was like, this game, they might score three runs. And sure enough, 1-1 all the way into extra innings. And they decided to score 7 in extra innings to hit the over. So we had a good lap of it. Yeah, 7 in the 10th. But it's been a good run in baseball, so I'm not too discouraged.
No. Yeah, Justin's been killing it in baseball. So, guys, again, sportsguyvalue.com. Justin has an awesome special running right now. $99 for the year, I think, $9.99 per month. It's a fantastic special. Look, Justin, what games are you looking at going into week two? We got a pretty good slate. I put about 15 on my card, and I plan to bet all 15 of them one way or another.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple that come to mind. Obviously, you want to see how Oklahoma does against Michigan, and with obviously Michigan really, you know, debate on whether they should have been, you know, given that extra second or not. How Oklahoma, they look really good. I know Rob was all about on them and how they travel to Michigan. And then you've got Mississippi State traveling to Minnesota. Obviously, that's our next opponent after Townsend for South Carolina. And then you want to see how LSU responds after kind of beating up on Clemson. They host Louisiana Tech. Those are really kind of the three that come to my forefront as I really dive into week two in the next coming days.
Well, I'll tell you this. I probably gave my mom a panic attack. Mom, I'm not going to bet all 15 games. I'm not going to do it. But if I did, I'd, you know, put it in your name. But no. All right. So last week, you know, looking at this, Rob went 4-1. Rob, you crushed it. I think your only loss.
Listen, I think I went 3-2. I'm going to be honest here. As the bad snap over the head of Trinidad Chambliss, for those of you who are not watching that game and watching us, and that's gonna be a big loss for
Tamar. You know what? Did you lose UNLV?
No, but didn't I take Auburn to cover the 7?
No, you took Auburn money line.
Oh, okay. Okay, then
I'm looking at it right here.
I did go 4-1. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so Rob went 4-1. His only miss was the Oregon minus 24.5, which we will come back to.
That was tough. That was competitive too. You talk about good games.
Absolutely.
It was
down to the wire.
Yeah. And I was pulling for Boise State, honestly. And look, I got a text during that game that said, "This is why when you're projected number 2 overall in the draft, you just go. You just go to the draft."
I agree. I still think it's ludicrous, but that's a whole nother conversation.
But yeah. Right now I'm 1-1. I did win Southern Cal minus 23.5, but I lost the Clemson LSU under 51.5. I still have Notre Dame to play, minus 20.5, Ole Miss minus 6.5, and SMU minus 3. So we'll give a full recap later.
Quick 3-and-out for Ole Miss there, and they punt backed up almost to their own end zone, and Louisville take over on their own 47.
Yeah, thank you for that. That feels great. I just wanted to update. I feel like Mo's really swinging my way right now.
It's early. It's just one possession.
But, all right, so
one early possession does not make the difference in the game.
Gamecock fans know it, right? All right, so let's get into our best bets, Rob. I'll let you start because you are the winner. I'm just assuming you're going to go 4-1. I'm going to go 1-4.
Well, look, I think we're on the same page here. Let's say this one together. Oklahoma, right? Like, that's where I'm going first. I have to go there first. And I said it earlier in the show, my week one overreaction is Oklahoma's going to win this game 45-0. So at 5.5, I'm hammering this. I think personnel-wise, this would have been – I would have picked this regardless of what we saw out of Michigan or Oklahoma in week one. Oklahoma could have won that game 30-10 against UTEP, and Michigan could have handled business and won their game 40-10 against Western Michigan, and I still probably would have liked the matchup of Oklahoma winning by at least a touchdown. The defense for Oklahoma, Matt, we've continued to hammer this. Until proven otherwise, I'm putting them as the number one defense in the country. They've got the personnel to do it. I like what Brett Venables does as a defensive play caller. So give me the Sooners 5.5.
Justin, I think what did this open at? I think I saw a 3.5 or 4.5 earlier today.
Well, I don't know what it opened at, but I checked it before coming on the show, and it's at 6. And I would get on it right now because it's going to hit double digits before kickoff on Saturday. I guarantee it.
I'll take that too, by the way, for what it's worth. But yeah, get on it now.
I mean, for me, I just refuse to give Michigan any credit. It's a travesty. I hate it. I hope Oklahoma wins 1-0. So I'm on it too, Justin and Rob.
Yeah, I love it. I love Oklahoma.
So I'll go all, next year.
We're in that one together. So if we lose that one, there's no separation in our records, Matt.
No, not at all. And we'll be fine with that. I'll go first this time. And Justin, you know, we always want to get your take on this. I got Alabama minus 10.5. I think that Alabama's defense is very, very good. I think their secondary is better than their front 7. I like the front 7 to make this a one-dimensional game. And if that happens, and look, we take these lines on Sunday. So this line's going to move. You need to go to sportsguyvalue.com to make sure you get that best actual pick on game day. But I'll take Alabama 10.5.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it here. You know, Kentucky hadn't been challenged. And new quarterback on the road. It's going to be an interesting matchup in week 2.
I agree.
Oh, that's not the warm and fuzzies I wanted.
I have questions there, man. I have questions. I'm staying away. New quarterback on both sides, but you got maybe a little more experience with Kentucky side. I don't know, man. Like the running game for Kentucky was really good, and we still have this question mark of lines of scrimmage for Alabama. So that's where, you know, does Baxter shorten the game a little bit? It can Kentucky spiderweb like they used to? I know that's not what Will Stein wants to do long term, but it might be something that he's got early on. Okay, my second one, I rode with the Cal Bears last week, and they let me down big time in our pick 'em on the Big Spur and Gamecock Central. Lost to UCLA, but they're a 3-point dog to Syracuse, and I'm going to take the Bears again. Okay, I think that there's enough here that I'm gonna reach for one. This is one of those games where I'm trying to get a leg up on you, Matt Anderson, and continue to stretch my lead. So, not a lot.
Well, you know what, Rob?
Not a lot going for Syracuse. I don't know what I know about Syracuse or don't know here, but I like the quarterback at Cal, and I think three is enough for me to just go ahead and say I think Cal wins the game.
I'll say this, Rob. This is my favorite part of the show because what you're doing right now is taking the push. So, you know, it'll be like MLB standings. And when you win by three and win the bet and I go 2-3, you still get a half game. So I don't disagree with you. I do think Cal is better than what they showed. Justin, what are your thoughts here?
I'm all on it. I'm Cal. Yeah. We got to ride. I have no argument here.
All right. God, this like sucks.
Go better.
Rob, give me your next one.
Are you on my next one?
Yeah, I've done two. I think you've done two. Yeah, give me your next one.
Yeah. So last week I went with UNLV. That was one that you mentioned that I had in that win column. And I like this team. I'm going with them again. They're a 4.5-point favorite against North Texas. I don't see that being that close, boys. I like Jackson Arnold and the Rebels to get that one done. I like them by probably double digits, but at least by a touchdown. So that's what I'm going UNLV again. I'm going to ride the hot hand on that one.
I'll tell you something that happened at my fantasy football draft last weekend. I have a guy that's a great friend of mine, degenerate gambler, but he was all over UNLV and said, Jackson Arnold, former 5-star quarterback. He's at UNLV now. Like, he is a 5-star quarterback at UNLV, and he's been riding with UNLV too. So we'll see. Justin?
I love UNLV as well. I mean, you already took the words out of my mouth again. I think this team is going to be pretty good this year overall.
What's the thought process behind the line there? Do we know? Why are they just a 4.5-point favorite? Is there something about North Texas that I missed? Do I need to do some more mean green research over there?
I haven't done enough research to know, honestly, but I just in that spot and a whole new North Texas team, they got swiped out, you know, with all the NIL stuff. So
that's what I thought. Okay.
Matt, so Rob, you might not know this rule, but I have a very strict rule where anytime I can get Iowa in a game where it's under 41.5 points, I'm going to take it. Iowa versus Iowa State is a 41.5-point over under. Iowa is a 14.5-point favorite. This just screams Anaconda chokehold. And I think I would take under 31 in this game. So give me Iowa State, Iowa under 41.5.
I would pay not to watch this game. I got to stay away. I just can't stand when these games are like this. They're just tough to watch. So to me, this is a stay away.
Iowa 40-0 win in week 1 against Northern Illinois. Hawkeyes showing a little bit of life on offense, Matt Anderson. What can they do in week 2? We'll see.
We'll see. What you got next, Rob?
Now it's starting to bog down for me a little bit. Okay. I don't want to spoil your next one, but you have a high profile matchup coming up. All right, I'm going to do it. You talked me into it. I'm going the other way. All right. Not to spoil you. Hook 'em. Give me the Longhorns to win this game at Ohio State or against Ohio State. They're hosting this year. I believe in Arch Manning. I think it's his time. This is a heavyweight matchup. I assume this is going to be College Game Day. I don't know. Have they announced that?
I'm not sure yet.
I would think that's going to be the case here, but I'm going to ride with the Longhorns. I did pick them earlier in the year to go to the SEC championship game against Georgia, and I picked them to win this game already this year, so I'm not going to go back on my word. Hook them.
Yeah, you're pot committed. I'll take Iowa State, or not Iowa State, that's the last pick, Ohio State plus 1.5. This game might be tight, y'all. We remember the Ohio State, and I believe it was Oregon game a couple years ago, which came down to a last-second field goal. I think this is going to be more low-scoring than people think it'll be. I think that Arch Manning still has nightmares from his game last year against Ohio State. This is going to be the first real team that I think that Arch Manning has played in the past 7 or 8 games. I like Arch Manning. I like Cam Coleman. I like their wide receiver core. I think that Texas brought in so many transfers that the hype around this game at home is going to be too much. And I think Ohio State's on a business trip. So give me Ohio State -1.5. I'd take the money line, but give me -1.5 or +1.5 just to be sure.
I don't know. I don't know about the Fighting Muschamps. You know, I just don't know. I don't know about, you know, Ohio State and the Buckeyes. To me, this is a stay away. I need to see more. Obviously, they're really two talented rosters. This is probably maybe I'll throw something on Saturday, thinking if I find an edge. But right now, I don't have an edge.
So I'll say one more thing on this game. This game is probably going to be the most bet game of the college football weekend, and it's going to be everybody playing it. You know, Justin, do you think this line moves at all?
No, not a whole lot. I really don't. I mean, maybe gets to 2 or 3 and no more than that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it moves anyway, it's going to be to Texas, which would make me like Ohio State even more. But all right, Rob, your last pick of the weekend.
All right, let me make everybody mad here. Last week, or last night, I should say, LSU with a beatdown of the Clemson Tigers. In week 2, Clemson will once again face an LSU quarterback who played in Baton Rouge, then in College Station for Texas A&M, Chapel Hill with North Carolina. Now, Max Johnson at Georgia Southern, a 31-0 win for Georgia Southern against Charleston Southern in week 1. Johnson was 28 of 39 for 281 and a touchdown. Clemson is favored by 21. I like the bounce back game. Dabo is not going to stand for not racking up some stats in a bounce back. I think that Clemson wins this game by more than 21 and they cover.
Woo. Oh, Justin, thoughts there, my man.
Rob, me and you are on the same wavelength. I love a bounce back for Clemson here. Like, I love this line. I'd like to see him drop to maybe 20. Give me the Tigers to bounce back here. Everybody's kind of buying low. This is time to buy them after getting beat down. Yes, give me the Tigers.
All right. I feel like I am Joe Public over here, but that's probably why Justin just enjoys, you know, me being a part of his membership. But give me Oregon -22.5 against Oklahoma State. Don't overthink this one, y'all. Oklahoma State just lost to Tulsa 24-10. This is the game where they figure everything out. They actually take pride. Oklahoma State's not good. This game, I believe, is at Oklahoma State. I think Oregon wins this one by 35 points.
Ooh.
Yes, I'm with you. I like Oregon here to really take care of business against Oklahoma. I mean, what about a program that has, you know, the funds to really build a squad, and they are just not doing it in Oklahoma State? The resources that they have is kind of dumbfounding that they're not turning it around as fast as they should.
Well, that's the thing. People think Oklahoma State has a lot of money, and they do, but it's stingy money. It's very stingy money, and they want to see success, which I think is actually how it should be. Hey, coach, prove to me that you can win, and then I'll help you get more talent. But we'll see there. Rob, thoughts on that Oregon -22.5?
I'm staying away. I do think that they have the talent, but they burned me last week, so I looked away from that one. Oklahoma State has a lot of question marks. There's a lot of question marks there for me. But the Portal House, Coach Lamb, Tulsa, shout out my boy Craig McMichael one more time tonight, as he was all over Tulsa all off season, and they pulled it off in week 1.
All right, well, we got to move on to Towson here. Look, we're not going to go in a very deep dive here at all with Towson. Towson's 0-2 on the season, lost 21-18 to Maine, lost 42-15 to Navy. Towson is averaging close to 240 yards through the air, 75.5 rushing yards per game. They've scored a total of 4 touchdowns on the season, averaging less than 17 points a game. They're allowing 10.5 quarterback pressures per game. The quarterback has completed 28 of 40 passes for 28 of 40 for 469 yards, four touchdowns, one interception. They do have some wide receivers, Cleveland Charlton and Aaron Interline, 16 targets for 10 receptions, 221 yards and three touchdowns. Over two games, the running backs have only forced eight missed tackles. The top three offensive linemen have allowed 10 quarterback pressures, two QB hits, and three sacks. The run defense has missed 12 tackles over three games. I mean, look, they played Navy last week. Navy ran all over them. 506 rushing yards on 73 rushing attempts. Six touchdowns, good for 6.9 yards per rush. Pass defense, they've only generated seven quarterback pressures and zero sacks, giving up 11 yards per reception. And quarterbacks are completing 62.5% of their passes. Navy only completed three of six, so you see where that number is coming from. So, Justin, I'm going to start with you. Predictions on this game for the Gamecocks versus Towson.
Man, where to start? I think anything above 3 points that South Carolina gives up is a loss. So I'm going to say 63-0. Right now, Townsend is not very good. This is another – I mean, they're not going to be as good as Kent State. Want to give a shout-out to a guy I met years ago, Steve Agabrot. He's the AD at Townsend, associate AD, former at South Carolina. That's why we had that matchup next Saturday. So, I think it's a good opportunity for them to get a little bit of money. But at the end of the day, you want to see South Carolina continue what they did against Kent State. And I don't expect – you know, Browse to show a whole lot kind of down the field. I think he's saving that for later. We didn't see that against Kent State, and I don't expect the same against Townsend.
So, Rob, I'll go ahead and go here because my prediction is the exact same as Justin's. Coincidentally, I think 63-0. Kent State would beat Towson by 30-plus points, and I firmly believe that. If you're worried about South Carolina being vanilla against Kent State, they kind of were, but they also took some shots downfield. They didn't really have to be aggressive. They might even be more vanilla this week. This is a game that the Gamecocks can rush 50 times for 400-plus yards and 5-6 touchdowns if they want to. South Carolina probably gets 11 to 13 possessions in this game. This is a pick-your-score kind of game for Kendall Briles and what he wants to do. So I say the Gamecocks score at least eight touchdowns. I'll do 63-0. They probably want to see a field goal kick attempt at some point, so maybe this game gets tweaked a different way. So, Rob, your thoughts before we get out of here?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I'm going 59-0. I think that there will be a drive somewhere in here where Kendall Briles does take a shot on third down when it's not necessary just to see what he's got. It doesn't work out, and they tried the kicker out there. Which kicker will it be? Well, I don't know. We'll find out when that moment comes to us this week. And 59-0. So, eight touchdowns, one field goal for the Gamecocks. I do expect a shutout again unless something crazy happens against this Towson team. I think that the personnel for South Carolina's defense, no matter who's in there, okay, at any point in the game, and I do expect, you and I talked about this earlier off the air as well, a lot of running in this. Yeah. It's going to run the clock, maybe be a little bit of a quicker game. So for that reason, I'm not going to have them getting to 70, but you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I thought about 70. I thought about 77. I even thought about 84, but I think this is going to be the game where it's a 7 o'clock kickoff, get in, get out, get the win, run your offense. So, well, guys, this is going to do it for tonight. We thank you all so much for being here with us. When you give us your time, it's the most valuable thing you have. So thank you. It doesn't go unnoticed and it doesn't go underappreciated. I know there are some good college football games going on right now. So, and I'm sure Justin's going to be locked into it. Rob's going to be locked into it. So we'll get out of here. But thank you again for being with us. Justin, thank you for being with us. Tell everybody again where they can find you.
Yeah, you can check us out at sportscapvalue.com. We have our daily plays and we'll get gearing up for week two coming up starting again on Thursday. So sportscapvalue.com.
And Rob Williams, tell everybody where they can find you.
FourQuarterFriday.com, as always, we'll be there for just, you know what, Google us, Four Quarter Friday, spell out the word F-O-U-R, and you can find our Instagram, our X account, our Facebook, our podcast channels, YouTube channel, where we have interviews throughout the week, and then, of course, FourQuarterFriday.com and the Varsity Club message board, and it is 3-0 Louisville Cardinals. Matt Anderson.
That is not good for me, but we'll look, you know, football's a long game. So I'm going to go check out those games again. Thank you all for being here, Rob, Justin. Thank you. We'll be here next Sunday to recap Towson versus South Carolina. And Justin, make sure you don't wear your smallest hat next week.
That's right.
It's literally the only thing I can see.
Sorry, man. We're dealing with circumstances around here. But, you know, this is a live stream. We keep people on their toes. We want them to, you know, be tuned in and week out. So we got to spruce it up every once in a while.
We definitely do. Well, thank y'all again. We'll see you next week.